And just like Israel, he came out of Egypt. Just like Israel, he was buried for 3 days and he was resurrected. Like, yeah, I mean, all this language about Jesus recapitulating the entirety of the life of Israel. Why does he go in the wilderness for 40 days and then get tempted by the devil? Like, what's going on there? It's because Jesus is doing all the things that Israel couldn't do.
Welcome to the Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast, a show devoted to bridging the gap to the historic Reformed Christian faith. Listen in as two friends, a layman Nick and a pastor Peter, discuss core doctrines of our confessional traditions with seminary and college professors, seasoned pastors, and more. These seasonal episodes exist to reach those outside the church, those in the pews, behind pulpits, and in the academy with rich truths of Reformed theology, and remind ourselves weekly how the finished work of Jesus Christ changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by the Davenant Institute, which seeks to retrieve the riches of classical Protestantism to renew and build up the contemporary church. Key to this aim is their educational arm, Davenant Hall. Davenant Hall specializes in educating the interested layperson, pastors looking for a refresher, and more, by focusing on the primary documents of the Reformation Church. No survey texts. Go right to the sources with an expert guide. Davenant Hall offers two programs, a certificate and a Master of Letters in Classical Protestantism, which is roughly equal to an MAR program at a seminary. In both, they will ground you in the theological, biblical, historical, philosophical, and linguistic foundations of the Protestant faith. There is almost nothing like this. Plus, Davenant Hall delivers these programs via digital technology to make high-quality theological education affordable through online courses. You will also have access to their Davenant Common Room Discord server to keep up with the lecturers and your fellow classmates. Davenant Hall insists on in-person fellowship as key to Christian formation, hosting regular residentials at the Davenant House Study Center in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains in South Carolina. So, if you're looking for a new course of theological study, I urge you to consider enrolling at Davenant Hall this fall. Visit www.davenanthall.com to find out more. Lastly, GGG listeners who are a first-time Davenant Hall students get a $25 discount on auditing any of their next term's courses with code GGGTrinity24, which is in our show notes. Again, please visit www.davenanthall.com to enroll. Hey, this is Peter Bell, and I am in the beautiful wine country of Central Coast, California, in Santa Maria, north end of Santa Maria, in Santa Barbara County. I serve Redeemer OPC, Redeemer Orthodox Presbyterian Church, on the north end of Santa Maria. We meet at Temple Bethel, which is right there, Temple Bethel, at 11 a.m. for Sunday service and 9:45 a.m., so just before that, for Sunday school. For all ages, we have Kids Sunday School, Adult Sunday School, or All Sunday School at 9:45. You can find us at discoverredeemer.org with one R. Again, discoverredeemer.org. We have a bunch of activities throughout the week, but most importantly, Sunday we have the gospel preach, the sacraments administered, and church discipline faithfully brought out. So I hope to see you here at Redeemer OPC in Santa Maria, Central Coast, wine country of Santa Barbara. Hope to see you.
Hey everybody, this is Pastor Danny Hyde from the Oceanside United Reformed Church. I want to invite you out to our church. We meet in sunny Southern California, here in San Diego. And we meet at the Army Navy Academy in Carlsbad, right along the ocean, as you can see, the Pacific. And we meet every Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning. We hear the Word of God and hear the Gospel preach. We have the Lord's Supper every Sunday morning. And then we have Sunday school at about noon for kids. We come again together at 5 o'clock every night, Sunday night, for teaching, prayer, and singing. And then we also have various midweek groups, Bible studies, men's, women's, and also other Bible studies as well throughout the week. So I want to invite you out to worship with us. If you know anybody in the area here in North County of San Diego, invite them as well. Let them know. You can find out more about us on our website, OceansideURC.org. www.oceanside.org, or also on all the various social media. You'll find us as well. God bless.
Hey, this is Peter, one of the co-hosts. We're doing something new. All ads will be fronted before the episode for unimpeded listening pleasure. A quick plug for our show, Guilt, Grace, Gratitude. Would you consider giving to our show? We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so your donations are now tax deductible. We've got two options to give. One, email us at guiltgracepod@gmail.com if you'd like to send a check or use our direct donor link. Or two, go to our show notes and click on our donor box link to give a recurring donation or a one-time gift. You can also click on our Patreon account in the show notes and sign up for monthly exclusives, merchandise, coupon codes with publishers we work with, giveaways for our subscribers, and much more. All donations we're gifted are used exclusively to pursue our mission to bridge the gap to reform Christian theology. Would you join us? Now, on to the show.
Hello, everyone. Yet once again, it's another day of fresh grace and mercy. This is the Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast, where we bridge the gap to reformed Christian theology for your listening pleasure. Today, we're doing a season 7 episode. We're going to be talking about the book Hosea in the Bible, a prophet book, still talking about the exile.
Pre-exile.
This episode is, or this season is, talking about how Jesus is found through all of Scripture, every book of the Bible. So we'll explain some connections and landmarks of where we find allusions and things pointing to Christ, and so the coming Messiah and the faith that is put into the coming Messiah. So the reason for why he comes and all that good stuff. So the relationship between Yahweh and Israel, and, you know, we'll go through all that stuff. This is a really great book about, you know, the marriage connection between Yahweh and Israel. So, and what, you know, God goes through when he is dealing with an adulterous nation. And then, you know, as we can connect that to his people. So, before we jump into the episode, we have Danny and Peter here. You'll hear from them. Our show notes have information on it about this season, past seasons, book clubs, our YouTube channel. You can subscribe to that. We have a website. We have a website to our Confessional Podcast Network, which is a network we created with other like-minded podcasts out there that are reformed and confessional, that we'd love to point you guys to. If you like our show, you'd probably like theirs. Just a friendly neighborhood reform podcast there. So, and then other information on our show notes, connecting you to a church. If you are not at a church right now and you're looking for one, there is a NAPARC, which is North American Reformed and Presbyterian Church Finder. You can find OPC, PCA, URC, other Reformed denomination churches out there, and see if one's in your area. And if one is not in your area, you can put a, you know, ping us or somebody else and see if you can maybe drum up a church plant if you want, so, or get one started. So, yeah, we'll get into this episode, and I'll let Peter and Danny further introduce themselves.
Yep. Well, I'm Peter, and that's Danny.
Yeah. Checking my shelf out for Hosea book.
That's, as Nick was talking, I was frantically looking through what have I previously used on the book of Hosea. And I can't remember the name of one of the commentaries, but there's one from a Jewish scholar that I really liked on the book of Hosea, because he goes through a lot of the Old Testament connections with it. And then there's Derek Kidner that I like a lot on the book of Hosea. He's fantastic too. And there's like articles that we read in seminary that on Hosea, but the title of them are kind of beyond me right now. But I know Nick had, I forgot to mention it before, but for those who are listening too, if
you're like, man, I wish Guilt, Grace, Gratitude had a merchandise store that I can buy shirts and
if
mugs
only we had one.
And stickers. If only we had, if only Guilt, Grace, Gratitude had a store. Yeah. And we say, you're in luck. We finally have a store. It is up and running, fully functional. So you guys can purchase stuff, purchase the official Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast t-shirt. And then I almost thought of titling it this, but I didn't. It's the Nick's Phrase mug. It's another another day of fresh grace and mercy mug, which might be our top seller. But I was thinking of tongue in cheek calling it Nick's Phrase mug.
Yep.
But I didn't
trademark
say that.
Trademark that, Nick. Trademark it.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, gotcha. You know, it makes sense. You're in the morning. Picture this. It's a crisp early morning, and you grab your cup of coffee.
Just like Danny's doing right now. It is Yeti.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I don't have my mug though, but you know.
It just kind of matches, you know, with the mug. So
yeah, but yeah, I just want to let people know. And we'll have a new ad that talks about it. But our official GGG pod merchandise store is up finally after like a year and a half. So it's up. So people can go look at it. GGGGuiltGracePod.com/store is where you guys can find any of that merch. So get it and rep it.
Yeah, we will be soon. So, or at least I will be. I can't speak for you.
Nick's all about it. Yep. And then I think Danny's doing it too. And I feel weird. So Nick and Danny will do it. And then I will promote them promoting us.
Yeah, no, there's no shame in marketing. So,
nope.
Yeah. Anyway, what do you guys think about the Book of Hosea? We're still talking about prophetic. He's a prophet, obviously. We're still talking about pre-exile stuff. This whole, you know, rift between, you know, the relationship between Israel and Yahweh God, and it's a lot of good direct analogy or metaphor, one of the two, of it being a marriage, which it's true. And, you know,
or at least a broken marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a lot of marital language and, you know,
it's almost always said as a foil to like Ruth. It's like, find your Boaz, sure, but don't find your Gomer. You're like, you don't want to marry the prostitute. You want to marry Ruth, which it's funny because Ruth kind of sets herself as a prostitute in a sense, but, or like Song of Solomon, like the song of the marriage between the church and Christ. So this is almost set up as like a foil. I've heard this before set up as a foil. It's like, oh, you don't want to be Gomer. Don't find a Gomer. You got to find your Ruth. You got to find your queen.
Well, God told Hosea directly to find a Gomer to understand what, you know, he kind of experiences with his people. So, you know, adulterous people. And, you know, Jesus Christ is the bridegroom and the church is the bride. Mm-hmm. So there's an obvious going right into it. There's like, okay, I can kind of see if you've, you know, understood that relationship already going into Hosea, is a little bit warmer of an introduction. It's not too confusing, but before we get in the weeds of anything, do you guys want to, you know, it's not a super long book.
I'll have Danny plug his resources first too.
Yeah.
What do you like on Hosea?
I just put it away.
Oops.
Yeah. I mean, I have a whole bunch, but this one's pretty good. So it's by John McKay.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Christian Focus. Mentor, I guess, is their like imprint for a little more like academic, but yeah, it's a good commentary. So I preached on Hosea like during COVID, so it feels like a million years ago.
I remember this. I remember
so my head's kind of I'm kind of blurry on Hosea. Like, you know, if you ask me like specifics about this and that, I'll be like, I in general kind of know what's up. It just, yeah, that was a strange time.
That's
Yeah, great book though. Really, yeah, helpful.
Yeah, that's
God, you know, to see God's relationship to his people.
It's a little clearer for me. Only reason is we translated through Hosea, my last class at Westminster in Prophets, and our final exam. Maybe Estelle doesn't want me to say this, because I think he still does it. Our final exam was we had to translate Hosea 1-3, and then basically provide a commentary on the Book of Hosea attached to that. So it's a little clear in my mind. And I was like 2 years ago, but it's a little clearer in my mind, which is nice. So I've gone through the Hebrew bit. Hosea Hebrew is not that hard. It's not as hard as like Isaiah Hebrew is. Isaiah Hebrew is kind of rough.
Yeah. And
Nick's I agree.
Nick's like, yeah, I gotcha.
There's nothing much to say other than I studied for this episode so long ago. I don't even, to be honest, remember every resource I did, but I think it's probably about the same as I was doing before. I just kind of broke. I have notes on each chapter, definitely for the audience and for time. I'm not going to read all the stuff, but I have a good kind of well-rounded understanding of what's going on. But I think what's helpful, like usual with the with these episodes, is you two kind of go back and forth. And if I have, you know, something to sprinkle in, I will. But do you want to do like a just a straight up flyover of just what this book is about, just so people can we can kind of go from there?
Yeah, maybe like a quick little flyover is I think the general assumption on Hosea is it's like all totally about the marriage covenant between Yahweh and his people. And it is, but it's like, it's hard to describe. There's this fancy word called recapitulation. And Hosea kind of does the same thing where it goes through Hosea and Gomer chapters 1 through 3, and then has like kind of more hope at the end of chapter 3, and then goes back to pronouncement of judgment in chapter 4, and then goes to hope a little bit later on, and then goes back to judgment. So it's a little less like kind of your average prophetical book, which kind of starts off heavy judgment and then ends on pronouncement of promise. It goes back and forth a lot more often than other prophetical books do, which is interesting because it's a little bit different of a structure than the rest of them. So I think it's chapters 1 through 3, chapters something like 4 and 5, and then 6 through 10-ish, and then 11 through 14 is like generally speaking how it's broken down, I think. But this and Hosea is a little bit harder to nail down because it goes back and forth so often.
Yeah. But
I don't know, Danny, what do you have to
add? Yeah, sounds good to me, man. Yeah, no, it's I just preached to Micah. It has a similar, like it alternates between bad news and good news. So
yeah.
Lots of condemnation, and then it's like little glimmers of hope throughout it. So yeah. Hosea is, you know, somewhat similar.
Yeah, I think the bigger prophetical books like Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel are a little bit more black and white, where like it has a big section on judgment and then a big section on promise. And they're more or less like bookended like that, where it starts judgment and the ends promise. And then the smaller prophetical books are a little bit more back and forth between judgment and promise. I don't really know why that's the case. I just, from reading it, that generally tends to be the case.
Yeah. Well, and before I ask a kind of a first question there, I think something cool to point out is knowing even what we see in chapter 1 is kind of a connection to 1 John in the New Testament, where we love God because he first loved us. So we only have the ability to love him because he loved us first. And you see that in Hosea, where this unconditional love that's not going to be broken from God to his people through the story of kind of Hosea as a prophet, as a human being, is kind of representing God. And then Gomer as a sinful prostitute human being is representing the nation of Israel and God's people. I don't know if that's
too far. I have a question for you, and this is going to be pitched to the audience, and maybe Danny knows where I'm going with this. Why would Yahweh tell Hosea to marry a prostitute if that is clearly a violation of Mosaic law?
I don't think she was a prostitute yet. I think
there we go. I like that answer.
Yep. She was a prostitute after they got married.
That's what everybody thinks, is she's been a prostitute, and then he's commanded to love her. I was like, no, that's against Mosaic law.
Because Israel wasn't always a prostitute in the beginning, you know. So
Israel's always been a prostitute, yeah. But that's why it's not like a strict 1-to-1 ratio that it's just Gomer, because also Hosea is part of Israel too. He's analogized with God in this, but he's also part of the tribe of Israel, so he's also part of the same people group. But it's Mosaic law command, like you can't marry somebody who's a prostitute, but that's Gomer's, like, she's prone to prostitution after marriage. Yeah.
And as covenantal theologians that we are, what is more covenantal in human terms than a marriage? Mm-hmm. So seeing that played out where that union of covenant in marriage between Hosea and Gomer is Gomer's the one that broke it, because there's the worst thing you could do in a marriage is cheat on your spouse. So, and she does that, but Hosea is called to, you know, totally abandon her and still love her. And that's what God does for his
people.
I'm
trying to think, and maybe Danny, if you can tweet, does she ever commit adultery in the book of Hosea?
I was trying to remember that. I thought later on in the narrative, it talks about that, and I thought it was like chapter 3, because I think chapter 1 is like a proleptic, you know, yep. She's going to become unfaithful at some point. And I think chapter 3 kind of describes that, so. Yeah, but I'm not 100% like, you know, absolutely say yes, you know that. But I think chapter 3 kind of says that.
I think it may something like she is going to do it, but I can't remember if in the book she actually does commit adultery. But yeah,
it
she's definitely
like she does. I mean, I would say
like chapter 3 was like more like the narrative. Chapter 1's like the poetic.
That's
know?
Right. Yeah.
But I think chapter 3 is more the narratival, like,
that's true. This is what happened.
You know,
yeah.
It tells you what, you know, tells you what's going on. So,
yep.
And I would also like to ask you guys, what would you say the interpretation of the children of Hosea and Gomer's names mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Lo Ami and Lo Ruchama. Am is people in Hebrew, and Ruham is like compassion or forgiveness. Stuff like that. So it's lo is not. So not my people, lo ami, and lo ruchma is no compassion or forgiveness or like something like that. So it's, and I even think Yahweh gives the interpretation of this. It's you have broken this covenant, and you gotta ask too, what covenant is being broken? Because Nick, let me ask you, can you break the Abrahamic covenant? The covenant of grace. Well, can you break the covenant of grace?
No.
Nope. Can you break the covenant of works?
Yes, we do all the time.
So it's not just like breaking the covenantal. Like, you have to be very clear about what we're breaking in this. We're not breaking the gospel as if like I can break the gospel promise. I can deny it, but I can't like break it. But we can certainly break like the law.
What about an unbeliever?
Oh yeah, too. The unbeliever can deny this and break this. Yeah, but that's
what I'm saying. Like, what about a person in the church who is baptized and has professed faith and who apostatizes? Yep. Isn't that breaking the covenant? No.
Breaking the covenant of grace, I that's them never being part of the covenant of grace. So the sign has been placed on them. They're can't break the covenant of grace.
They were with us, but they were never from us. They were never with us.
Yeah, with us, not from us.
But they're still in the covenant though, right?
They're still in the covenant community. Yep, they're still in the covenant community.
Like even amongst covenant, understanding of the Bible, like there's differences of opinion about these things. So
yeah.
I mean, I would say that a person is a covenant breaker. That's what I mean. Just like a person who's married and has commits adultery is a covenant breaker, right? Like, so yeah, you're in the, like, there's different ways of being in the covenant, different, like, you know, understandings of like how a person relates to it, but. Yeah, I would still say, I mean, God can't break the covenant of grace, of course, because God's the one who makes it. But certainly, like, the people in that covenant can break it. But God's faithful. That's what I would say is the point. Like, that's chapter 1, the end of chapter 1. Like, even though the Israelites are not his people and they're without mercy, yet God is the one who says, you know, he's made a promise, like the sand of the sea, so he's bringing it back to Abraham.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So So, and it's great that this chapter is quoted in the New Testament a couple of times, like Romans 9, 1 Peter 2, to speak about how in the fullness of times the Lord is going to save, not just save Israelites, but he's also going to save, you know, tons and tons of Gentiles, right? So like Abraham's seed will be like the stand of a seed, because as Paul says, like, it's not the physical seed, it's those who believe, right, who have the faith of the father Abraham. So Romans 4, Galatians 3.
Hebrews also, Hebrews 4:13, talking about Israel's sin was known to God, so was ours. It's impossible to escape his knowledge, and Hebrews 4:13 reinforces this truth. And Gomer really gives hope to every sinner, because, I mean, if we're really honest, we're all doing what Gomer does to Hosea as the bride of Christ to our bridegroom and our redeemer, who is Christ.
We've been, like Danny said, that we've been unfaithful, that God is still faithful to us.
Yeah. So I think, like, Peter, to kind of weave through the covenant language, because you were talking about the difference between covenant works and covenant grace, based on the relationship, it's based on what relationship. If you're already part of the elect and you've already been covered by Christ's atonement, by his blood, your sins are forgiven. So you're already part of his people. You can't lose the covenant of grace relationship, even though we mess up like Gomer does.
Yeah, but if, like Danny said, his like God's promise to us doesn't fail. Right. He's not going to look at us as like, oh man, they're messing up all over the place. But so I'm going to leave them go. I'm going to break off this covenant with them, because they're being bad.
Just like Hosea doesn't leave Gomer.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's where the hope of us saved people, us saints, like, we can find hope in Gomer, because she does everything wrong and he doesn't leave her. But if you're not saved, I mean, you're in the covenant of works. There is no covenant of grace.
That's why, like, when you're saying unconditional love, and you're not, like, qualify it, but it's not just kind of generic, bland, unconditional love for somebody. From God, it's the love that he has promised, that he has covenanted to us, that he is, if he ceases, then he is a promise breaker. He's a covenant breaker. So it's not just a generic, I'm going to love you because I love you. It's, I'm going to love you because I promised to love you. I'm going to love you because I covenanted to love you. I'm going to love you because I promised Abraham. I'm going to love the nations. I'm going to love Israel. So it's not just, I mean, sometimes Christians can just sound like, oh, God just loves, or unconditionally loves regardless, but this is a covenantally grounded love for his people and for the nations.
Well, that too, yeah. Like you said, he'd cease to be God if he broke his promise he gave to Abraham. So he can't lie. Like, if he promises, he's going to do something.
And he can't go back on his promise. Right. We can go back on his promise, like Danny said, but he can't go back on his promise. It's not
just to get it, like, yeah, I mean, this is kind of far afield, but we don't want to equate election to covenant. That's a Baptist covenant theology, right? So I think that's my opinion. You know, like, we get on dangerous ground when we start saying, like, oh, they're not in the covenant, that they're only baptized. Well, they're in the covenant. Like, our kids are covenant kids. Circumcised people are covenant people, but he calls them not my people. Like, right? So, like,
it's like Hebrews 6 kind of stuff too. It's like the warning language in Hebrews 6.
So, you know, how can he call them not my people? First of all, he's calling them his people. He's already saying, like, they were his people at one point.
Yep. At one point.
But now they're not, right? So, election's always, like, underneath all this stuff. But, you know, just the covenantal language, I think it's important. And to say that, these people, by their unbelief, they've violated the terms, you know?
Yeah.
They've not had faith. They've not had obedience, right? Like, they've not shown that they're members of the covenant, you know, like, faithful members of the covenant, you know, all that language that we use. But yeah, God is faithful. Like, that's the point. And there's a remnant of grace, as Paul says, Rabbi Saul says, you know, not all Israel is Israel. And so you know, they're called Israel. They're called the covenant people. God calls the Israelites all. God calls every Israelite elect.
Yep.
So even election, like we have to be careful how we speak of election, because the Bible talks about election in broad terms. So, but there's also, you know, that more restrictive way in which we speak of election.
Yep. Yep.
So, anyways.
Yeah, I gotcha.
I want to go back to the kids' names, because that can, it sounds really weird how their, what their names are, but without saying how you said it in, you know, Hebrew, like the English translation of how did their names show you how God was feeling at the time? Well, he doesn't change here and there, but I was just saying, like, the relationship between God and Israel based on the names Hosea and Gomer have of children. And they, towards the end of Hosea, it shows that, you know, that Israel is their people. So it's like saying, these are not my people, but yet they end up being his people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what
their names are. Just, yeah, the Lord's given them illustrations of his, their relationship to him and his to them, you know, and these names are meant to illustrate that, you know, they're kind of like walking around little sermon illustrations.
Cause that's not their actual names. It's
right
as far, it's like, it's an analogy of this stuff.
Right. But thank goodness not the real names. They would get teased in school a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure what the question is, but you know, their names are meant to be illustrative or illustrative of, what's going on with Israel and
they're faithless. They're faithless, and then them coming back in is not because they were faithful again. It's because God is faithful to his promise.
Right. Yeah, that's verse 10. Yeah, verse 10, 11. You know, the place that they're called not my people, they'll be called my people. In a place they're called no mercy, they'll receive mercy. So, yeah, the Lord's gonna, for a time, they're gonna go in exile. They're gonna be chastised, and they're gonna be disciplined, and you know, the tree of the covenant is going to be pruned, and you know, the vine dresser is going to prick off, you know, pluck off dead leaves and so forth. And then, as you know, Paul says in Romans 11, you know, this is also foreshadowing the fact that one day God's also going to graft on wild olive branches to the covenant tree. And in a place like, you know, in the place where they literally were not my people, and not receiving mercy, they're going to be the people, right? And they're going to be the recipients of mercy. So yeah, these kids' names were meant to speak to them, but also they point forward to the fullness of times.
Yeah, that actually answered my question, whether you thought it inadvertent.
I was not sure where your question was going, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, he did. The Holy Spirit was guiding your
comment. There you go, man.
No, because it does. It points to that God is a redeemer, and because those names are redeemed, you know, so, and Christ is our redeemer. So,
probably should get out of chapter one by now.
Yeah.
We gotta get out of chapter one, you know.
So going into like chapter four, you see some covenant of works, kind of.
See it in six.
I thought you see it in a little bit of four. Also,
you mean like,
no.
Yeah, chapter six, where it's, you know, like Adam, they transgressed.
Yeah, chapter Hosea 6:7 is it's not out of Israel, come on, son. That's like Adam, they transgressed my covenant.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Six. Okay.
Or perfect. Or you know, some scholars say it's not like Adam, but at Adam, right?
Yeah. And B.B. Warfield says, why not both?
Yep. Yep.
Because that's also, there's Adam, there's a city of Adam in the book of Joshua. What is it?
Yeah, it's a place.
Yeah, yeah, I forget Joshua what. But yeah, it's talking about this, because he's you're kind of wondering, like, who's he talking to at the beginning of Hosea 6, and Hosea 6:6 and before gives you some context for this too.
Yep.
But also helps us with understanding kind of the book as a whole, that there's violation of the covenants, there's apostasy from the covenant, there's unfaithfulness to the covenants.
Yep.
It shows you what they're breaking, because the exile is them being faithless and being covenant breakers. They're doing all the things wrong according to the covenant of works and the covenant of grace.
Yep. And the cool thing, I think the cool thing about chapter six is, I mean, it begins with a call to repentance, but The cool thing is, so he talks about, I'll just read it. It's, come let us return to the Lord, for he, I just find this language, like, it's so striking. He's torn us that he may heal us. He has struck us down that he will bind us up, and he will bind us up. And then verse 2, after 2 days, he will revive us. On the third day, he will raise us up that we may live before him. So yeah, he's describing the whole entire exile.
Yep.
Is described as 2 days, and the third day is the resurrection. So, you know, obviously, you know, I believe, like, the language of, you know, on the third day he was raised from the dead is Old Testament language.
Oh, big time. Not, this in Daniel 12, which we'll get to later on.
Yeah. It's not saying that Jesus was buried for 3 days.
No,
it's biblical language. And, you know, in God's providence, like, this imagery of, you know, on the third day, it's all throughout the Bible. And it's always something good happens on that third day.
Always.
Yep. So that's the point. Like, so, you know, we could, oh, well, you know, he was taken out from the cross before the sun went down. That's day one, you know, and then Saturday, one full day on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yep. Then it tells us in the gospel that he was resurrected, like, before the sun came up on Sunday.
Yeah.
Not so he was resurrected day. Before the third day even began. Right. Yep. So, and they're not even full days. So, you know, oh, well, you know, they used to calculate time differently than us. And, you know, the first minute of Sunday equals the entire day. Well, I think that, like, it starts
As long as you have 1 minute Friday, full Saturday, and 1 minute Sunday, you got 3 days.
It just starts stretching it. And it's like, no, this is the Old Testament language that goes back to the prophets that's meant to say that, you know, what Christ has done, I guess this will take us, like, chapter 11.
Yep.
You know, how out of Egypt he called my son. Like, all this Old Testament terminology is then appropriated in the New Testament to show, like, Jesus is fulfilling, like, the entire history of Israel.
Yep.
He's doing everything that they couldn't do for themselves.
Yep.
You know, and even when they came back from exile, you know, after 2 days of being torn and broken and so forth and rended and so whatever, they're resurrected. Well, you know, even their resurrection right back from exile, you know, it's never the same. Like, you know, the temple was a complete disaster. Like,
they got nowhere to worship.
Like, they're ruled by foreign leaders.
There's no land boundaries, you know? Nothing.
Yeah. Like, the land is tiny. Like, there's different parts of the land. There's Judea, there's Samaria, there's
split lands, Galilee. There's everything.
There's, like, all these spots, right? And, like, they all speak different dialects. And it's like, it's a complete mess. Like, but, you know, the Messiah has come, and, you know, he begins to draw all peoples to himself, and literally fulfills the promise to Abraham that the people of God would be like the sand of the sea, and the stars of the heaven. So, yeah, I just think chapter 6 is great. And then, yeah, it's like, hey, by the way, you know, you guys, like, Adam broke the covenant.
Yep.
And that's why I'm the one who's going to raise you up, you know, and resurrect you. So
that's why we talked about this last week or the week before, one of those two, where I think if we skip too fast to moralize this or to place Christ, we should, of course, place Christ in this. But like Danny said, if we skip too fast without, like, seeing this dwell in the Old Testament first and what Hosea is doing. Because like Danny said, like, Hosea is prophesying the exile with Lo Ami and Lo Ruchma. He's like, you are my people right now, and you will not be my people during the exile. I'm exiling you. I'm showing you that you've broken, you've been faithless to the covenant. And then at the end of Hosea, obviously they come back in. So he's prophesying. Yep. This is exilic language. This is an exilic book, which is why, you know, I'm not a fan of people who just immediately moralize Hosea, because you just miss the point of what he's saying. And like Danny's saying too, with the 3 days, with the resurrection language, with the covenant breaking language, with the exilic language. And then that's why a lot of, I think, modern interpreters, like, run circles around Hosea 11:1. It's like, what's he doing? Like, why does Matthew feel like he can say Jesus coming out of Egypt?
Matthew's not quoting the Bible right. Yeah, that's appropriating it.
They're not sitting in the Old Testament and seeing all these themes coalesce and showing that what Homer and Hosea are showing in a, like, Homer? A single family.
Homer?
No, sorry, not Homer.
Homer? Yeah. This guy's been reading his Greek plays, you know.
I literature. I heard way too much Simpsons yesterday. I didn't watch it, but I heard way too much Simpsons yesterday. So that Homer is my brain.
You're thinking of the Simpsons. I was thinking about, you know, the Homeric epic, you know, and that kind of thing. And, you know,
Gomer. So that's all that to say is, It's like Jesus is an individual who represents corporate Israel and his people. Like Gomer and Hosea are individuals who represent corporate Israel and what Yahweh is saying. This is going to happen, and it's not because of your faithfulness you're coming back in the land. It's not because of your goodness you're coming back in the land. It's not because you decide to be a good marriage partner one day. I'm going to bless you with all this stuff. It's because I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to put you back in the land. I'm going to raise you up. I'm going to bring you out of Egypt. I'm going to bring you out of exile. I'm going to bring you to the promised land.
By the way, when is this episode going to air?
In a week and a half.
Oh, it is?
Uh-huh.
Oh, we've already caught up.
We have. Yep.
Okay. Gosh, I thought I was like, oh, we're recording now for like 6 months. Okay. So
this is April 8th. This comes out.
Okay. April 8th. This is coming out. So
a week after Easter.
So I just discovered this on Monday morning on March 25th, Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
There's this like, Twitter storm all about hashtag crisis king.
Oh, I've heard of this. Yeah.
You seen this?
Yeah.
So, apparently there are a bunch of anti-Semites. Supposed Christians. I guess a lot of them are Christian nationalists or they're Catholic integralists. And they're using this phrase, crisis king, as like a quote unquote dog whistle, anti-Semitic dog whistle.
Yep,
right?
I've heard this.
Anyways, and I had no idea this was going on. I just saw like James Lindsay, who's a PhD guy who writes all kinds of stuff about Marxism and, linguistics and whatever. And he had said something about, Christians, you're being, crisis king, it's an anti-Semitic trope, whatever. I'm like, so I posted a few things about, Christ and whatever. And people said, oh, you got to be careful because it's like a dog whistle. I'm like, what are you talking about? Anyways, people of God, listen to this. Okay, so this is what Peter said. The Old Testament, like the New Testament. You can't understand the New Testament without understanding the Old Testament.
Yep.
And you can't understand who Jesus is without understanding the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's ridiculous. The Christians can't, like, to be anti-Semitic is absolutely, it's abhorrent, but it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
That we Christians who worship the Son of God who took on Jewish human flesh.
Yep.
We worship a resurrected Jewish glorified man.
Yep.
Right? The God-man who is, and he's a human being, same humanity as us, but he's ethnically a Jew.
Yep.
And he's the king of the Jews, and he's the Messiah of the Jews. And just like Israel, he came out of Egypt. Just like Israel, he was buried for 3 days and he was resurrected. Like, all this language about Jesus recapitulating the entirety of the life of Israel. Why does he go in the wilderness for 40 days and then get tempted by the devil? Like, what's going on there? It's because Jesus is doing all the things that Israel couldn't do,
mm-hmm.
right? And he came as the Savior and the Messiah and the King of the Jews, but then to bring that kingdom and to bring people into that kingdom from outside. So, yep. We were connected to a Jewish Savior who fulfilled Jewish prophecies,
mm-hmm.
right? From the God who saved Israel, it created them as, the Jewish nation. Like, all this anti-Semitic stuff and, whatever is going on out there, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, we are Old Testament, like Christians are Old Testament people.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So.
That's
thus endeth the lesson.
What this doesn't do, real quick before Nick, what this doesn't do is I think people are scared. It's like, oh, don't spend too much time in the Old Testament because that's there's not too much Jesus in there because Jesus doesn't show up until the New Testament. So kind of dispensationalism has crept into our brains and hearts and has divorced the Testaments from each other. And I think people are scared of like dwelling in the Old Testament. It's like, oh, there's not too much promise. There's not too much hope. It's all dour and God's a tyrant in the Old Testament. And there's no gentilic hope. There's nothing there for us. But what Danny's saying and what I'm saying is it's the exact opposite. It's when you dwell in the Old Testament, when you let it speak for itself, when you see Hosea in its context, when you see the prophecies in its context to Israel, all that does is fill out Christ's work even more to where you get into the New Testament, you say, I see what they are doing. And when you read your Old Testament again, it's like, okay, I see it. I see Christ fulfilling this in the Old Testament because the pressure placed from Christ previous to him is it's like he's molding all of this stuff to look like him. And so when he comes in, it's like, I see what he did.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that, Abraham is our father of the faith. We are those.
Yep.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Abraham wasn't a Jew. He predates the Jews. It's right.
Yeah. Yeah. God creates the nation, right? Mm-hmm. From one man and one woman. And, obviously, like, you know, Jewish people would say, like, you know, we're incorrect in saying that. They might say it more strong than that, but that's what we believe. Like, as Christians, we don't think that there's the Jews and then there's Christians, like, and there's the Old Testament, there's New Testament. We think that the New Testament is the outflow of the old. It's the, it's the bringing to reality all the hopes and the dreams and the promises of the Israelite prophets, you know, and patriarchs and the promises, like, you know, and so we have to be steeped in the Old Testament to even understand, like, it's Good Friday this Friday, it's Easter Sunday. Like, these aren't just like out of the blue things that, oh, well, our God did these things. And, you know, they never had promises in the Old Testament about this stuff, you know, or the Jews had their hopes and, you know, Jesus did something completely different and brings in a brand new religion. Right. It's like, no, we believe that the Christian religion following Christ is following Father Abraham.
It's the fullness of Old Testament religion is found in Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's not like the Jewish religion and the Old Testament and the Christian religion. Once Jesus comes in, as Jesus said, all of it pointed to me and all of it's consummated in me.
So I guess, like, these, you know, crazy nut job, like, what anti-Semite people are saying this, but then the other hand, you got all these, like, you know, completely, you know, all these progs, these progressives who are saying, like, oh, to say that is to be anti-Semitic and whatever. And it's like, no, the apostle, Rabbi Saul of Tarsus, aka the apostle Paul, Romans 9-11 discusses all this stuff, like, how it is that not all of, like, national ethnic Israel is Israel. And the Old Testament shows that, like, that's not a Christian claim. That's the Old Testament itself saying that.
Yep.
Right. And so, like, our heart's desire and prayer, just like the apostle, is that all the Israelites, all the Jews would be saved. The Jews would come to know that Jesus of Nazareth is the Messiah promised by the Old Testament. And even that, Paul goes on to say in Romans 11, like, you know, there's a partial hardening in this age until all the fullness of the Gentiles are brought in. And then all Israel will be saved. So. Wow. You know, and there's different ways to understand it. And, you know, then they'll be saved. But, you know, at a minimum, it means, like, when all the Gentiles are brought in, and at the same time, like, there's still a remnant of grace amongst Israelites, God is going to save all Israel. Or it means that in the end, before the second coming, there will be a mass revival. As just like Hosea describes, like, the Lord is going to raise them. The Lord's going to raise them up, and they're going to have their eyes open. They'll see the one they've pierced, and they'll turn to him in faith, and the Lord will return, and, you know, he'll gather up all of the children of Abraham. So,
And another way of saying it, is it true to say Old Testament Judaism is Christianity in a state of infancy?
Well, I want to say, because Judaism is like a later thing.
Yeah. Right? Judaism, like, is Second Temple.
Like, yeah. So, you know, we just say, like, the Old Testament, the God of creation, the God who called Abraham, the God who brought Israel out of Egypt, all that, that faith and those promises.
I wouldn't even call them two different things. It's the Old Testament faith is the New Testament faith.
There's no difference. Yeah. It's like that. Yeah. Like that, all that hope and faith, like, looking forward to its reality.
Yeah.
Which is in,
there's different Jesus. Types and shadows in the Old Testament, which is what I think catches a lot of people up. It's the sacrificial system, the Mosaic covenants.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they had a different faith system. It was just the types and shadows were different in the Old Testament, pointing towards.
When you do say, Christianity fulfills Judaism, well, you know, that's, like, technically called supersessionism.
Yeah.
That
is like replacement theology. Yeah.
Replacement theology, right? Like, that's not what covenant theology is. It's not quote unquote replacement theology. It's not supersessionism. It's just continuing
the same faith.
Continuing the same thing. Right?
Well, here's a better way, maybe, or another way of saying it is, Abraham was a Christian. Moses was a Christian.
They wouldn't have they wouldn't have labeled them.
Scott Clark here.
Yeah.
It's their Old Testament
I think
he looked for it. Yeah, Jesus said like Abraham looked to my day and he rejoiced. So sure,
It's a little anachronistic to call them Christians, but it's not to say it's different. You know. They have the same faith we do and the same Redeemer.
They didn't know that term then, but as we look back, they are Christians just as we are Christians.
Well, that's what Paul says. That's what Paul says of Moses. That's what Paul says of, that's what Jesus says of Moses in John 5, that Moses looked to Christ's day. That he said of Abraham that Moses beheld Christ, didn't just look forward to him, but actually like saw him, beheld him. It's what he says of Isaiah in John 12, John 11, one of those two. I think it's John 12. Where he says Isaiah, when he was in the temple in Isaiah 6, beheld Christ in all of his glory. That's the same thing we say of Hosea. It's they're not just looking forward this. This hope or the fulfillment of the Judaic system and to become Christianity one day for them to come back from exile once they believe in Christ, because they didn't believe in him before, or they had a different system before. That's why people are like, this conversation is why people have so much difficulties around Matthew 2. It's why can Matthew say what Matthew says in chapter 2 of Jesus being rescued and brought out of Egypt,
because the Messiah is Israel, right? The Messiah is he's representing Israel in himself. Isaiah 52, 53, is it one person? Is it the collective?
And when you're saying Hosea 6, beginning of Hosea 6, it sounds like the parallels to Isaiah 52 and 53 are still there, striking and crushed and fulfilled. And all this stuff is just, he's rehashing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again.
Yep. Yeah. And just, I guess, to go back, to just wrap up what I had said and kind of what you just said, Peter, I guess to kind of put it like, we always talk about the faith of Abraham looking forward to Jesus. Like I'd put it like, do it backwards. Like all Gentiles who look to the Jewish Messiah are saved. It's not just that they're looking forward and and here we are, kind of lording it over everybody. No,
we still got all the same Gentiles Jewish Messiah
who look to the Jewish Messiah are saved and join with Father Abraham and are grafted into, as Paul says, like as wild olive branches, we're grafted onto the tree of Israel, the tree of the people of God. Right. And that's the whole point of Israel. It's like, it's the people of God. And so all of us who come, from every tribe, language, people, nation, like we are privileged to come in. And that's why Paul says, don't think of yourself too highly, because God can also prune you off too. Right? That's what Paul says in Romans 11. Like, don't get too arrogant, Gentile, because Jews were cut off so that Gentiles can be grafted on. Don't forget, you also can be grafted, you can be cut off. So, be humble, and be privileged and thankful that you've been joined to the people that God has been saving since the beginning.
Yeah, Old Testament saints, which were either Gentile or Jewish, were saved the same way we are now. I mean, it's in a way it's more simple.
And when you say Jewish, we don't mean as like the Jewish system, you mean like Jewish nationally.
Correct. Yeah. And Gentiles, the Old Testament saint, they're looking forward to a Messiah. They have the same faith we do. We just know who Christ, his name is, and
we have a clear revelation of his work. The New Testament.
We're 2,000 years after his atonement and resurrection, where they were before all his incarnation. So,
and isn't that Paul's point in Romans 3 and 4? Four. Three and four, but isn't that Paul's point?
It's the exact Abraham, point with Abraham.
Abraham was a Gentile.
Yep.
And he was saved by faith. Mm-hmm. People were like, well, how can he be a Gentile? He's the father of the Jews, he's the father of Israel, because he was uncircumcised.
He's came from a land of Ur, which is pagan, and then was uncircumcised.
Joshua 8 says he came from a family of idol worshipers.
Yep.
And so he was called out of a pagan land, of a pagan household. He was uncircumcised, yet he was looking to the promise by faith. And as Paul says, he was justified by faith, apart from works, apart from any rites and ceremonies. Then he circumcises his son and himself. So he was a Gentile. brought in, and out of that Gentile, God creates the nation of Israel, or the people of God. So it's just, you know, we got to keep all these, all those things are super important. I think Hosea is like, I guess, go back to chapter one again, just how important like verses 10 and 11 are.
Yep.
That they're looking forward to something to come, based on the promise to Abraham of the stars and the sand, right? And so like, Hosea is saying, hey, that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know it didn't happen when they came back from the exile, because it was like a ragtag assembly of nobodies, and like, it was so tiny.
Yeah.
You know, like, no, the promise is going to come true. And it's like, well, how is it coming true? Like, are all these people stayed behind? You know, when the Magi come, how did the Magi know to come? Like, they're following like promises and prophecies, and, you know, they're looking forward to something. I think they're at a minimum, they're influenced by exilic Jews in Persia, if not Jews themselves, right, who've been there for generations.
Yep.
So, but the whole world is going to come to know this, and Jews and Gentiles alike, you know, will be like the stars in the sand. So,
yeah, no, you can get the return of exile at the end of Hosea.
At the very end, yeah.
Because of the promise at the beginning of Isaiah. Or, of Hosea. You can get the return of exile at the end of Hosea because of the promise at the beginning of Hosea.
Yep.
And to catch us up to chapter 11 where you left off, chapter 8, just to follow up on what we were talking about, some connections here in Hosea to some parts of the New Testament. You know, we're seeing in chapter 8 of Hosea some language about sowing and reaping principle commonly used in Scripture, which is Galatians 6. And then you see also connections to Hebrews 11, the Lord who is the renewer of those who seek him. And then
I love Nick's Puritanism coming out right now.
Take it or leave it. Take it or leave it. Here's a little Calvinistic plug on in chapter 10 of Hosea. God's grace is greater than man's sin. Man must come to God on his terms, God's terms, and at God's time. So God's in control. God's the, you know, Christ is the husband of the church. God is, you know, Yahweh is in charge of providentially carrying things forward, Redeemer. Isaiah 55 is kind of seeing connections in chapter 10 of Hosea. Seeking must occur while he may be found, while he permits himself to be found. So God will, you know, speak to his people in a certain amount of time to have Gomer come around and be saved in the end and be redeemed in the end. But for some reason, he has Gomer experience, you know, exile, and even Gomer.
Well, it's not for some reason. She was faithless. She broke the standards.
Yep.
Just like Israel did.
Yep. And then if we go through to chapter 11 of Hosea, out of Egypt, I call my son, we see connections to the Gospel of Matthew. And then chapter 12, we see a connection to Genesis 32. Jacob would not let go until he received a blessing. So we must keep asking until we receive the answer. So you need a little
Puritan. Nick.
Yep.
And then, I'm not saying this to like jest him, but this is sometimes I'm not a fan of like the general stuff, because it kind of goes beyond Hosea's historical context and seeing the exile and feeling that, because sometimes people will take like the moralisms and kind of strip it from Hosea's context. Instead of like dwelling that like Gomer is not just like randomly in exile. She was faithless, just like Israel was faithless and broke the covenantal standards. So of course they're in exile, because that's exactly what Yahweh said was going to happen in Deuteronomy 28. If you break this covenant, you will go into exile. That's a curse. This is exactly what Israel should be expecting. But then kind of like Gomer, they're like, well, why am I in exile? And then the prophets are like, are you serious? We told you you're going to be in exile when you did this stuff.
I got a question for you guys, actually. This might help with the audience. Yes or no kind of answers for me. Was Gomer redeemed?
Possibly. I don't know.
Okay. So did Jesus, I think she probably was saved in the end, but that's neither here than there. But kind of makes more sense. But did Christ take the punishment Gomer deserved on the cross?
If he did, then she's redeemed. But we have
yeah. Well,
but I think
what do you mean by that? Like, I would say
the punishment that we deserve as sinners, you know, obviously Gomer is the sinner in this relationship as the covenant breaker within a marriage. Christ received that punishment, justice that was supposed to be put onto the sinner. He, as a God-man who didn't deserve that justice, through his love, he took on that justice, that punishment that sinners and Gomer deserved on
sure,
the cross.
I mean, doesn't the Bible say that he's the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the
world?
We're
just not sure if that's Gomer. Right? We're not given any indication. Like, we're not told whether that happened for Gomer or not.
I mean, I would say it's speculative. I mean, we don't know. So, but I would say,
in general, it's true. Yeah. If Christ took upon her sin, then
Christ,
we're
did Christ take upon her punishment? Well, yeah. I mean, we make distinctions. Like, Christ died for all sufficiently.
Yep.
Right. And there's different ways in which we understand, like, the atonement. I mean, you know, we don't have to, like, there's a very strict, narrow view of that, but. You know, there's also like the Canons of Dort talk about, you know, he died for all sufficiently. So, yeah. And we can use that language of he died for the sin of the world. He's the savior of the world and so forth. So
as the bridegroom, he's sacrificed himself for his bride, his church.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. We just.
Sure. But yeah, again, but like there's Bible uses that language and he died for the sins of the world. Right. So we have to put them both together. And that's why we say, he died for all sufficiently, but you know, he died efficaciously for the elect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So but you know, I would say like it's speculative to ask, like, did he, you know, I mean, we don't know if like on the cross he had her in mind. I mean, you know, like as a one-to-one
possible,
transaction,
but we don't know.
We just say in general, yeah, he died for the sins of all sufficiently.
Yeah.
Cool. I just wanted
whether
to
she believed or not. That's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're not told at the end that she believed in the Messiah.
Yeah, just for the sake of like connecting this to the gospel.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think we have been connecting this to the gospel with the covenant of works. Matthew with Matthew 2 taking from Hosea 11, because it doesn't just have to be kind of a spiritualizing of the text to get us there. It could be you dig deep into this and see how the Messiah himself and how Matthew very clearly talks about Jesus being the one whom identifies and takes on corporate Israel's identity, which that's the gospel when he's coming out and he's redeeming his people. That's the gospel.
And just the Lord's grace and mercy in chapter one, that he reverses the status. Like that's like the gospel's already there.
Mm-hmm.
He's already foreshadowing what the Lord.
Yeah, you don't have
to
spiritualize it to make it gospel-y. You can look at the connections of this and see the gospel already seeping through.
Yeah, well, and I was making a connection too to just the marriage relationship in Hosea to Christ as the bridegroom on the cross taking the punishment of what his people deserve. That's all. That's not spiritualized. That's just connecting the gospel.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess, you know, no, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree with both of you guys. I would just say, you know, so I guess people hearing this, some people, like Peter said, a lot of people don't read the Old Testament or pastors don't preach it. And it's because when they do, they don't like read it.
They don't sit
like kind of organically, like as they're reading and seeing how chapter one, you know, fits all the way back to Genesis 12.
Yep.
And,
yep.
You know, they'll preach chapter one or they'll preach chapter four and just complete law sermon. It's all law. And at the very, very end, like there's an artificial like, oh, and by the way, Jesus died for sin. Like, you know, the whole thing should be like weaved together, like the law and the gospel. You know, it's like you don't preach a law sermon to get to the concluding point, which is the gospel.
Yeah.
Right. And you don't.
It's not saying don't spiritualize, but the problem with spiritualizing is it tends to be like at the very end of the sermon. It's like, oh, and by the way, this is a marriage covenant between Gomer and Hosea, which reminds us of our covenant with Jesus.
Or the other way around, like you preach a John 3:16 text, and at the end you give them law, you know? So
exactly. Yeah.
Like we preach along the gospel, like it's not one point after another point. It's they're both of those things are weaved into everything we say.
Yep. Yeah. You know? History actually feeds the gospel because the gospel is a thread throughout the historical narrative that shows us what this is. And that's what the apostles do. They take parts of this, not just take parts, but they take parts to show us the whole on how Jesus fulfills the exile, how he fulfills the covenant of works, how he is the substance of covenant of grace, how he is the bridegroom of the bride. So all of these things are what we see in Hosea, and the bridegroom and the bride is gospel. And it's like, it sounds weird to say it's part of the gospel. It's also part of the gospel is he fulfills the exile because he was exiled. He fulfills the covenant of works because he filled the covenant of works and invites us into the covenant of grace. He is the one who was called lo ami. He was the one who was forsaken on the cross. And then he is brought in to a living union with us. So it's, you want to see the fullness of this within the narrative versus just an aspect, though the aspect is true. You want to see all aspects as part of the gospel.
Doesn't the apostle Paul, he helps explain that with the connection of Hosea to with 1 Corinthians 15, that, you know, talking about the necessary consequence of Christ's resurrection.
He doesn't quote Hosea, but like he talks about the resurrection of Christ, which you see, like Danny said, in Hosea 6 as well.
Yep.
Perfect.
Cool.
So maybe to tie a little ribbon on this, it's with Hosea, you kind of get the exile scrunched up into 14 chapters, and the warning to Israel that this is going to happen. You were like an unfaithful marriage partner, just like Israel in the past, just like Israel and God's people in the future are unfaithful marriage partners. But because, like Danny said, Hosea 1, 11, and 12 exist to say that his promise is based upon the Abrahamic covenant, and we will be like the stars and sands of heaven. That he's going to fulfill this, and he's going to be his promise and his side of the covenant will not be broken. He's covenanted himself to us, and though we are faithless, he is still faithful, just like he was to Israel, and just like he is with Jesus, and just like he is with us. And so we are involved in this marriage covenant, not because we ourselves found Jesus, like Nick said, or because we were faithful. It's because Jesus himself is faithful to us.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, if you guys want to
stop,
you guys want to find us again, you can find me at Redeemer OPC in Santa Maria. We have just agreed on a new building, which that's not out yet. So I don't know the address of it. So we're still meeting at Temple Bethel. This is northeastern Santa Maria. Sunday school at 9:45 and Sunday service at 11 a.m. So Danny, where can they find you?
Cool. Are you, by the way, are you guys like west or east of the 101?
We are east of it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Oceanside United Reformed Church. We meet right on the border of Oceanside, Carlsbad in San Diego, at the Army Navy Academy in their cadet chapel. We meet on Sundays, 10 a.m. I don't know why I said 11, but 11 was the old days. 10 a.m. Sunday school's at noon. Evening service at 5. Yeah, we have midweek Bible study. I just taught that last night, Book of Numbers. Good Friday coming up, and Easter. Well, I guess it's coming out after that, but yeah, all that good stuff. So we have men's group, women's group, all that fun stuff in the midweek. So prayer meeting, that kind of thing. So just let us know. We'd love to meet you, oceansideurc.org, or find us on all the social media stuff. Platforms, whatever they call them.
Yeah. Nick, where can they find you, or can they find you?
Yeah. So I'm, checking out some Reformed churches here in Kootenai County in Northern Idaho. But I'm still a member at Trinity OPC in South Orange County, John Morse's church, where I used to live and where I am a member at, technically still. So I still would love to promote his church. It's they meet at 9:30 Palisades Elementary School, Capo Beach, which is Dana Point neighborhood.
Southern Orange County.
South Orange County,
OC.
Yep. So yeah, I'll let you guys know which church I settle on here and become a member at. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at and where I'm a member at and where I'm presently
Cool. All right. Well, for those who are listening, next week, so we got Hosea today. Next week, we have a few more pre-exilic prophets, and then we'll get to the post-exilic after that. So we got Joel through Zephaniah next week. So you guys have that to look forward to. This would be a fun little section to go through.
Like 2 minutes of prophet.
That's right. All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Cool. See ya.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode in our seventh season, Jesus and All of Scripture. Please make sure you subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast catcher or on our YouTube channel. Give us a rating on Apple or Spotify and write a review. These really do help the show reach a wider audience as we continue with our goal of bridging the gap to Reformed Christian theology for all peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations. We'll see you next week for another episode.